On March 1st, 1972, Rod Serling's Night Gallery wrapped up its second season on an undeniable high note with the 1-2 punch of The Caterpillar and Little Girl Lost. The season as a whole had been, by most accounts, a success. It consistently came in second in its time slot, bested only by Mannix on CBS, and ended with a cumulative 30 share, which placed it roughly in the middle of the ratings pack. Not a hit, but by no means a failure, either. Little Girl Lost, and the entire second season with it, ends with the world being unexpectedly and suddenly destroyed, which, in retrospect, feels a bit like a kind of prophecy. On March 21st, exactly 3 weeks later, NBC announced that Night Gallery would be returning for another season, but in a radically different form. The hour-long multi-story construct, which rather brilliantly mirrored the classic EC horror comics of the 1950s and had never been seen before on TV, except for the one-off Trio for Terror episode of Thriller in 1961, was to be obliterated in favor of a more traditional half-hour single-story anthology format, which had been seen on TV many times, most notably in Serling's own Twilight Zone. So, in retrospect, that cosmic event that blew up the Earth serves as a visual representation of NBC burning the show to the ground and offering to televise whatever might rise from the ashes. It wasn't just the diminished length that differentiated the new Night Gallery from its former self. An all-new title sequence was created, complete with new theme music courtesy of jazz composer Eddie Sauter. That distinctive font used in the opening titles was traded in for something, well, more stately. Visually, it's a variation on the previous title sequence. You still got paintings flying toward you, but those creepy, agonized faces are nowhere to be found. The Sauter theme is faster, more urgent, yet the elements move at roughly the same speed as in the previous version, and both sequences are identical in length. But there were other, less obvious, changes afoot. NBC demanded stylistic changes to the show. There would be no more thoughtful, moving character studies, and no more adaptations of Gothic, i.e. European, horror fiction. Going forward, the network wanted modern, Americanized stories, with more emphasis on suspense versus outright horror, and, absurdly, more action. You know, something along the lines of Mannix. On September 24th, 1972, the revamped series, Night Gallery 2.0, if you will, premiered in its usual 10 p.m. time slot, only it had been moved from Wednesdays to Sundays. And as if to pour salt on the wound, CBS relocated Mannix to the same Sunday time slot, all but guaranteeing that Night Gallery wouldn't prevail on that night either. Creator and host Rod Serling, in typical Rod Serling fashion, didn't mince words when discussing the changes. Quote, "I'm fucking furious. These people are taking what could have been a good series and are so commercializing it, it's not going to be commercial. They don't want to compete against Mannix in terms of contrast, but similarity. It's their feeling that it requires goosing up with audience-grabbing attention the first 30 seconds and considerable action, as opposed to anything insightful, cerebral, or sensitive. And consequently, we're running scared. We've been cut to a half hour, which is sort of like the kiss of death. And if not death, more of a moratorium of a sort. The fortunes of the show are that it has been, at the moment, renewed for 15 weeks, and will then likely change its complexion considerably. It will be mostly suspense now." End quote. 15 episodes were indeed produced. However, on November 6th, just 6 weeks into the new season, NBC announced that they were canceling the show. However, the series remained on the schedule all the way through the 1972-73 season. It was preempted so often that it took that long to burn off the remaining episodes. As it limped toward its existential finish line, something wholly unexpected happened. Despite public knowledge that the show was in its final death throes, despite those frequent preemptions, despite airing on a network perfectly content to let it wither and die slowly and painfully, its ratings steadily increased until, with the airing of its final new episode on May 27th, 1973, it cracked the Nielsen Top 10, coming in at number 8 for the week, a height not reached since the pilot telefilm achieved the same rating in 1969. which means the series ended on the same high note it bowed with. This is likely why NBC kept it on the schedule through the following summer in reruns to, you know, wring every last possible drop out of it. Sadly, it wasn't enough for them to rescind their primetime eviction notice. On August 12, 1973, a repeat airing of the episode The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes marked the end of Night Gallery's network run. But its story was far from over. Parts 1 and 2 of this documentary series detailed the extreme measures taken by NBC, specifically Harry Tattleman, to conform the first two seasons to the new half-hour format when the series was prepared for syndication. Since season 3 was already a half-hour show, its 15 episodes happily made the transition completely unmolested, which begs the question, why do we need a syndication featurette on this Blu-ray set at all? Well, as it turns out, the last piece of the syndication conundrum puzzle is perhaps its most fascinating, though admittedly has very little to do with Night Gallery at all. But first, a brief side tangent, if you'll permit me. Fast forward to 1987. The Twilight Zone reboot on CBS, which, like Night Gallery, was an hour show with multiple stories per episode, was canceled midway into its second season. In a startling example of history repeating itself, all those segments of varying lengths were reconstituted as half-hour episodes for syndication. This meant that many of the longer stories endured varying degrees of trimming. Some, like Harlan Ellison's Paladin of the Lost Hour, which featured one of screen legend Danny Kaye's final performances, suffered greatly. For the two longest segments, Her Pilgrim Soul and A Message from Charity, CBS did what Harry Tattleman and NBC would not. They turned them into two-part episodes to avoid completely butchering them. Unfortunately, some padding was done to accomplish this, which somewhat diminishes their impact. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's certainly not ideal, but it's probably the lesser of two evils. Imagine if They're Tearing Down Tim Riley's Bar and The Messiah on Mott Street had been expanded instead of chopped all to hell. Wait, before you answer, consider the bizarre ways that some Night Gallery segments were expanded. Would we really want to see Harry Gardino fighting a giant spider in either of those? By and large, the 80s Twilight Zone's transmutation was considerably less painful than Night Gallery's. However, the end result was a less than robust 64 half-hour episodes. In a surprise move, CBS commissioned a third season of 30 additional half-hours to be shot on shoestring budgets in Canada, for the express purpose of bulking up the episode count for syndication. Back in 1973, Universal Television wasn't about to commission new Night Gallery episodes, even though the reformatting of the network run had only wrought 72 episodes when 75 was the absolute minimum in those days. Now, it's impossible to point fingers with anything approaching surgical precision at this late date, but somebody, maybe it was Harry Tattleman, maybe it was someone a bit higher up on the managerial food chain, came up with an audacious, even shocking solution.
Move down the darkest corridor of the inner mind.
ESP is a fact.
Across the comprehensions of reality.
Science fiction.
Is it?
Beyond the shroud of your subconscious.
Back. Farther back.
And into the sixth sense.
Come with
The Sixth Sense premiered in January 1972 on ABC as a 13-episode mid-season replacement series, airing at 10 p.m. on Saturday nights. The show was created by Anthony Lawrence, which he'd spun off from an ABC movie of the week he'd written a year earlier called Sweet Sweet Rachel. The series starred Gary Collins as Dr. Michael Rhodes, a parapsychology professor who, in his spare time, investigated ESP-related phenomena. The series offered lots of spooky visions, some intriguing paranormal concepts, and a steady stream of familiar 70s TV guest stars, among them Patty Duke, Lee Majors, Cloris Leachman, William Shatner, Henry Silva, and Stephanie Powers, who had also appeared in Sweet Sweet Rachel. Unfortunately, the show's ratings, well, weren't great. However, it did manage to get picked up for a second season, But then ABC pulled the plug midway through. Sound familiar? All told, 25 hour-long episodes were produced, roughly the equivalent of one season, which by rights should have spelled the end for the show, since its syndication potential was nil. It seemed destined to vanish into the ether, like so many other one-season wonders. How many of you remember, or have ever even heard of, Doc Elliott, starring James Franciscus? Lucas Tanner, starring David Hartman? Sword of Justice, starring Dak Rambo? They and countless other short-lived series faded into utter obscurity after being canceled. The Sixth Sense, however, didn't disappear with them. Instead, it was handed a second life by being drafted, certainly against its will, into the Night Gallery syndication package. But, like I said, The Sixth Sense was an hour show, which means all 25 episodes were forced through Harry Tattleman's shrinky-dink machine and gutted from 51 minutes to 24. Even the most severely truncated Night Gallery segments weren't cut that deeply. To create at least some measure of continuity between the original episodes and the newly adopted siblings, Rod Serling was brought back, at considerable expense, to narrate new introductions for them. Said introductions included both on-camera appearances from Serling and voiceover narrations on top of montages of cut scenes, so at least a bit of context could be established for the Reader's Digest condensed versions of the stories to follow. This meant that new paintings had to be commissioned for him to introduce. Tom Wright wasn't available, so Yaroslav Geber, the artist behind the unforgettable paintings for the original Night Gallery pilot film in 1969, returned to provide the final 25 works for display in the gallery. A closing of the loop, as it were. Geber had actually already done some work on The Sixth Sense, chiefly paintings that featured prominently in the episodes With This Ring I Thee Kill and I Did Not Mean to Slay Thee. These paintings were naturally used in Serling's new introductions. I should mention that it wasn't just the Sixth Sense episodes that were altered for conformity's sake. Several proper Night Gallery episodes had shots of the new Yaroslav Geber paintings spliced into their introductions.
Good evening, and welcome to an art museum of the unique. Paintings offered up that infrequently find themselves hung in the more prosaic places. Paintings that are frequently as much formaldehyde as they are pigment. So upon viewing, if you sense a touch of the grave, the morgue, the concrete slab, count yourself more or less normal in terms of your taste in art, at least this art.
Sometimes they'd stick in some Tom Wrights as well.
The name of this place, should you have come in here accidentally out of the rain, is the Night Gallery. We deal in paint, pigment, light and shadow, realism, surrealism, impressionism, and ghost stories. Item number one over there. It could be a gentleman sitting in an electric chair, but it isn't.
These types of alterations weren't done to every segment. In fact, a good number of them weren't touched at all. The basic rule of thumb is this. If you see an arbitrary shot of a painting by either artist that doesn't fit the episode in question, then it was added after the fact. One of the big draws of the 1969 Night Gallery TV movie was the casting of film legend Joan Crawford. However, for reasons unknown, the three segments that made up that pilot film weren't included in the syndication package. But Ms. Crawford can still be found in said syndication package, since she guest starred in the Sixth Sense episode, Dear Joan, We're Going to Scare You to Death, a role that would constitute her final screen performance, so at least her Hollywood swan song was semi-preserved. Regrettably, a brief, unscripted chat between she and Gary Collins about ESP at the end of the episode didn't make the cut.
I not only enjoyed your performance in tonight's show, but it's a sincere pleasure to meet Joan Crawford in person.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
I've watched this show enough to feel as though we've met before.
Perhaps we have. ESP.
It's interesting how many people have had experiences they're convinced are ESP.
Are you one of those people?
Well, I do know that certain things happen on occasion that just cannot be explained away.
For instance?
Well, I had a dream that my dog, who was very special to me, was falling, and I kept running after him, trying to catch him. And the next night, he did fall 30 feet down between the wall and a free-flying staircase that was in my apartment. Luckily, he survived. But how do you account for my dream the night before it happened?
ESP.
For me, definitely.
I think there's a lot to be learned yet about ESP, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to use mine to get you back on our show as soon as possible. Thank you for joining us, Joan.
Thank you, Gary. Good night.
Good night, Joan.
Collins conducted similar brief chats with guest stars Jane Wyman and Sandra Dee in other episodes, which would also go unseen on Night Gallery. How do we categorize these 25 episodes? Night Gallery Season 3.5? Season 4? Both? Neither? There's no wrong answer here. Now, should you ever tackle the syndication run yourself, the outliers are easy to spot in the first 30 seconds. The opening title sequence is a kitmash of elements from all three Night Gallery seasons. The visuals come from Season 1, which is the same as Season 2, minus the Starring Tonight cast spotlights. The music is the Season 2 theme by Gil Millay. The font is from Season 3. Additional Sixth Sense specific title credits were added to the opening sequence to further differentiate the episodes. The end credits were left as is, unaltered from their original airings, except the Season 2 Night Gallery theme is heard instead of the Sixth Sense theme by Billy Goldenberg, even though he still receives screen credit. For the Sixth Sense aficionados out there who have perhaps never seen the Night Gallery versions, there are three episodes that might give you a bit of confused pause. For reasons unknown, three of the episodes weren't just chopped in half, they also suffered name changes. Coffin, Coffin in the Sky became Flying Sepulchre of Death. And Scream by the Light of the Moon became Candle, Candle Burning Bright. And Five Women Weeping became Five Widows Weeping. At the time this documentary featurette was produced, the syndicated Night Gallery was playing on the standard definition Comet TV cable channel. But that might not be the case by the time you see this. If you have Comet TV, check the listings. Granted, it'll be a jarring step down from these pristine, high-def Blu-rays, but I definitely think it's worth checking out. And again, those 25 Sixth Sense episodes can't be seen anywhere else. Having said that, The Sixth Sense in its original form isn't entirely lost. It was released on DVD in France by Elephant Films in 2014, so interested parties can certainly track it down. Now, I'm not aware of any plans to release it here in the States, but, well, my fingers remain hopefully crossed. Actually, the completist in me would love to see both the originals and the edited versions released together. I think we can all agree that it would make a stellar fourth quasi-Night Gallery Blu-ray set. Hell, I'd like to see the entire syndication run released on Blu-ray too. Now for some, the entire thing may be nothing more than a historic curiosity. Others may disavow the syndication run entirely, but for me, it's an intrinsic piece of the Night Gallery tapestry, and as such, it's worth preserving. Who knows what the future holds? Maybe it'll happen someday. But for now, it gives me great pleasure to wrap up this documentary trilogy with all 25 Rod Serling introductions for the Sixth Sense adoptees. Since there's no discernible chronology in the Night Gallery syndication package, these intros are sequenced based on the air dates of their original Sixth Sense broadcasts. As you'll likely notice if you're at all familiar with Serling's style, it's blatantly obvious that he didn't actually write these. In their glorious Rod Serling's Night Gallery, The Art of Darkness coffee table book, Skelton and Benson report that it was an unnamed person or persons on Harry Tattleman's staff who scripted them out. Serling just showed up and reeled them off on camera for an undisclosed sum. That's not to denigrate their value. I mean, it's still Serling's voice, but... Now, I'll warn you, the video and audio quality of these bits vary wildly, between fairly passable to fairly lousy. But the point is, they're here, each and every one of them, appearing on home video for the first time ever. So, enjoy.
Good evening, and welcome to Night Gallery. Now, if you'll just follow me.
Our tableaus for tonight are somewhat gruesome and full of revulsion, but such are the spoils of war, a somber note on the horrors of war. There's no just reward for the suffering men endure, no compensation possible for the memories that words fail to communicate and horrors too great to be conceived. Our story is that of one man's trials and tribulations, but it could be that of a great many POWs.
Help me. Tina, help me. Please.
So great the pain, so great the isolation, that minds may reach out for their salvation.
Dad? It's me. It's Randy.
Hope is man's greatest asset. With it, he may conquer his bestial nature. Our canvas has tried to embody a wayward soul in wartime. Let us reach out with our compassion as we watch I Do Not Belong to the Human World. Of you all to come to our little exhibition. Wonders abound in our gallery tonight. Matters most strange shall be witnessed. A man delves into the mysteries of parapsychology to find himself at the mercy of a demoniacal mind bent on destruction. Is a riddle and murder. A mental aberration becomes the instrument of death. An apocalyptical battle ensues, whereby illusion and reality intertwine and lose perspective. This Dantean exploit is captured on canvas by what may appear to be a surrealistic manifestation. Therefore, let me entreat you to watch closely as we unfold the tale of the heart that wouldn't stay buried. Welcome to Night Gallery. Now, if you'll just follow me. Our menage of the menacing is resplendent tonight. We have for you on canvas the representations of man's unconscious fears. Look closely, and perhaps you may find your own. Our tale for the soiree takes a look at the collective brain and the power that ensues from such a malediction. You see, my friends, the mind can become its own worst enemy when limitless power is unleashed. Our portrait aptly depicts the inherent tragedy of power. You will now witness how absolute power corrupts absolutely in Lady, Lady, Take My Life. Nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares. Our gallery is a hodgepodge of Machiavellian masterpieces, each calculated to cause a twinge in every fiber and sinew of your nervous system. Our item for tonight is intimately connected with an architectural structure, an old mansion with its own particular spirit, if you will. But you see, some houses are capable of imparting that certain feeling. Death, impending and past. The painting you see before you quite realistically portrays the true nature of our classic mansion. For within it, you'll find the answer to many questions in the form of Kabbalistic rituals. We call this horrific gem
The House That Cried Murder. How nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares. And tonight, wondrous marvels adorn our walls, creating a unique exposition of the malefic. Have you ever wondered who controls the minds of our important statesmen? The answer to this question may be quite perplexing, for entities of evil abound in infinite variety of forms. They can, for example, bend the will to self-destruction, if such is their goal. Our portrait for tonight embodies an aura of misgivings in a tale we call The Man Who Died at 3 and 9. Night gallery. Now, if you'll just follow me. Tonight, our gallery reflects the horrors of the Victorian age. Surprising? Well, considering the repressions of that age, the most sinister forms of aggression may surface. Bizarre emanations of days gone by, visions of passions past and present, such are the eerie occurrences in tonight's anecdote of the macabre. You see before you a Victorian manifestation of a room. More than a room, if you will, a room within a room. Confused? Well, then gaze closer as we resolve the mysteries of a painting entitled Can a Dead Man Strike from the Grave? Lovers, I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Our gallery of the unusual has taken on new proportions. Upon our walls lay the trappings and fine illusions of the most memorable of events, the wedding ceremony, complete with dirge and wailings from the circumspect entourage. The story for tonight is one of illusion and marriage. A rather apropos combination, if you'll pardon the cynicism. Right. Our painting forebodes an ominous countenance. This is the groom in our tantalizing anecdote. Behind that mask lies years of experience, cunning, and the dreams of all men. He's achieved what all men hope for, and yet the paradox of it all is that his achievement inevitably brings forth his eventual downfall. Look carefully at this portrait of a man in love and a masterpiece we call With This Ring I Thee Kill. Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon, where the pictures are quite out of this world. We have for you tonight a perplexing tale of the supernatural. Our gallery is dedicated to those fine women of Salem, whose extracurricular activities were slightly less than orthodox. Tonight, an ancestral embodiment of those malefic powers will reach out from the tomb to claim a life. Some will live and some will die before justice is invoked. So venture with us over the unwholesome threshold of a latter-day witch as we gaze upon the countenance of a painting we call Witch Witch, Burning Bright. How nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares. You see around you man's fears encapsulated on canvas, and yet they are but a mere reflection of the horror they symbolize. Tonight's story, for instance, is one of murder most foul. Death is in the eye of the beholder, a demented eye. To still the ravage of this earthbound spirit, silver is suggested. Silver, one of the purest of the basal metals, becomes an obsession to the feverish brain. Our canvas embodies this horror in a most abstract fashion, for like Abel and Cain, the eye of vengeance is upon us in this tale. You see, eyes have always been considered the mirror of the soul, and the soul we have for you tonight is most evil. So watch the canvas closely and look into the eye of the haunted. Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Our compendium of the unorthodox is full of surprises for you. Tonight you see before you the unsightly, the uncanny, and the unmentionable. Our story tonight fits all three categories. We have a rare delight, an equestrian manifestation in all its ghoulish grandeur. An unmentionable deed is committed only to resurface for vengeance. You now see before you the expression of such intangibles in oils. There's beauty and tragedy in this tableau for all to see, an echo of a distant scream. How nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares. We present to you in these humble surroundings the pictures of rituals as old as man and his fears. As you shall see tonight, old beliefs die hard. The most mundane social event may be only a disguise for the most horrendous of rituals and sacrifices. Yet in such trying circumstances, the bonds of family blood are strongest. They may even transcend the material world and via the eternal high perception senses call out for help.
No!
Ours is such a story.
No!
Our painting depicts the main protagonist for the evening, the elusive spirit of evil known by countless names throughout the ages. Beelzebub, Lucifer, Satan. He is the deification of man's seamier side and plays a central figure in tonight's tale we call Whisper of Evil. Lovers, I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Welcome, aficionados of the macabre. Forgive our solemn circumstance, for we bring you tonight a tale of woe and misadventure. A lost soul in search of bittersweet revenge. A haggard, listless, persevering soul, as you shall soon witness. Death's eternal peace has been disturbed. A damp spirit returns from its aquatic resting place to haunt and wreak havoc. Not even the tranquility of mind of Sun Tsing, a Chinese religious philosophy, can undo what has been done. And so we must stand back in silence as we watch unfold the shadow in the well. How nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares.
Our representation in oils transcend the very elements from which they have been composed. For you see, the artist has substituted blood for linseed oil, a scalpel instead of a palette knife, and a morbid, psychotic imagination for inspiration. The symbols on the canvas may seem at first perplexing, but I assure you they form a cohesive amalgamation of clues to a murder. This physiognomy frozen for time immemorial may yield up a terrifying secret if we are perceptive enough to heed it. A tale of disembodied love in search of traumatic truth. Our canvas embodies this fascinating dilemma. But for more of this icy preoccupation, watch closely as we present a painting entitled Face of Ice. Good evening, and welcome to Night Gallery. Now, if you'll just follow me. You see here before you moments of terror caught and woven into the gossamer webbing of time. The distillation, as it were, of each individual's particular fear on canvas. Surrealistic, perhaps, or maybe our senses are at fault. A case in point on the existence of a higher sense, perception, or a sixth sense, if you will. ESP, an elusive and imperceptibly tangible reality for Dr. Rhodes, who's about to come face to face with death via such banal instruments as a guitar, a coffin, a hearse, and a young folkloric singer. Dr. Rhodes will have before him the enigma of a premonition, and dependent upon his ability to unravel this conundrum are the lives of 10 people. We therefore present to your contemplation the elements of this riddle in a painting we call Flying Sepulchre of Death. Good evening, and welcome to Night Gallery. Now, if you'll just follow me. Join me, art critics, in our unusual montage of the macabre. We have for you a study of a vision of fear. Most of us have had some experience of deja vu. But for Joan, the experience may well cost her life.
Diane. Mommy? Mommy, why did you let me die?
You mean really kill her?
I mean scare her to death.
An innocent game of mental conjuration in the hands of some pretty sinister teenagers may soon turn into murder most foul. You see before you a limpid representation of past and future death on a collision course with the present in a tale entitled, Dear Joan, We're Going to Scare You to Death. Nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our Salon of Mysticism. We have for your delight a seminar on precognition, a most unusual fair, I'm sure you'll agree, especially when one considers that our knowledgeable speaker on the subject is an embryo.
Now 6 months, a month, a week, and now, Julie, you're all the way back. You're in your mother's womb.
Within this subject matter of infantile divination, we must make some daring conclusions regarding our notions of time. Time is indivisible, externally extent, and past, present, and future are really concepts of the human mind, which move along a time track, on a one-way trip through the reality we call life. But enough of this, tempus fugit. Let us now venture back into the night gallery along a murderous time track in Witness Within.
Thank you.
Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon, where the pictures are quite out of this world.
As the immortal bard so aptly expounded, the evil that men do live after them. A just analysis for tonight's offering. You see before you a night stalker of the 1880s. London is the locale. This man's evil emanation, trapped in time as psychic energy, waits for the innocent to unleash his fury. Our portrait for the occasion may have you baffled. It is of this time, of that place, and is signed, with affection, Jack the Ripper. Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Tonight, a chilling tale of preservation. Icy remnants may no longer stay embalmed when men's ambition is to roam. And let us consider the many forms that hell and its messengers may take in their appointed duty. Such is the nature of man's evil doings that a frostbitten hell may be for some just recompense. In any case, retribution's long icy fingers may reach beyond the cryogenic tomb of everlasting oblivion to claim their unwilling victims, as our frozen portrait so aptly depicts in Once Upon a Chilling. Come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares. We offer tonight happenings most strange, explicable only to those who will believe in the night gallery. Two minds reach out, one for aid, the other for comprehension. But minds are ethereal bodies at best and ill-suited to remedy the ills that befall the corporeal entity. Our theme for the soiree is communication, a timely anecdote, if you will. For most of us, our five senses are sufficient modes of communication. However, a rare few find a sixth and more elusive sense, a most effective instrument, as you shall witness in Through a Flame Darkly. How nice of you all to come to our little exhibition. Welcome to our gallery of dreams and nightmares. Tonight, our Museum of the Grotesque is dedicated to murder in all its myriad forms. Man has always excelled in his ability to conceive the most horrendous and ingenious methods of disposing fellow members of his species. Depicted in these frames, you see victims of the various accomplishments and strides made in the field. As a point of further interest, we have a new addition to our collection, which I'm sure will please you devotees of the night gallery. An elixir of death, if you will, in the guise of the most commercially acceptable product.
No, I am not going to die here.
Who said anything about dying?
Don't lie to me. I know what's happening.
You're going to get back in this...
No, I won't! No! Somebody help me!
A clinically baffling puzzle. The perfect crime has yet to be committed, but man will continually endeavor to achieve this goal. Bearing this in mind, shall we watch I Did Not Mean to Slay Thee? Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Welcome to our exposition of the malefic. We present for your judicious contemplation a surrealistic manifestation of fear in one of its most cleansing forms, fire. Fire, one of the four elements in ancient teachings, has had many esoteric purposes. Tonight we may witness one of its more lethal applications, death. A melting, searing, fusing, scorching,
charring death. Whether it be via the fire from the hearth or via a lit candle or a lamp, the malefic forces of the mind find vent to their rage. In any case, for those of you who take their pleasures dancing around the firelight in solemn circumstance, we dedicate the following plight we call Candle, Candle Burning Bright. Welcome to Night Gallery. Now, if you'll just follow me. Our gallery is full of unorthodox masterpieces, fragments and demoniacal memorabilia of rural Americana, a solitary ranch, a storm, and the sound of children's moanings. Captivating? Well, if not, I'm sure it'll be a restful sojourn for our lawless society. You might even find a plot of land to your liking. Our painting has tried to capture the elusive nature of this rural piece of real estate, yet one can't help but feel that something's missing, the spirit or soul, perhaps, of the old homestead. So let us look deeper into a landscape called If I Should Die Before I Wake. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Watch your step as we venture into the Stygian darkness of the night gallery. Explore with us the regions within the outer casing of the earth, say 6 feet under, and meet with us its unholy inhabitants. Some shrouded and others as naked as when they came into the world of the living.
No!
Mourning is our greeting to the dead, and so we accept the spectacle of 5 widows weeping. Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world. Item of interest for those of you who have been contemplating the idea of a vacation. We in the Night Gallery have our own special way of getting away from it all. Of course, the elements we seek out may not quite fit your taste of leisure, yet for some, I'm sure it'll have its more diverting moments. We have a spot all picked out for you tonight. A trifle damp and windy, but certainly not without charm. A chance to relax and get some exercise. As you can see from our painting, this holiday resort has something for everyone, providing your tastes run toward the unusual and the occult. But let us be on our way as we watch Gallows in the Wind. Of you all to come to our little exhibition. Our gallery is somewhat sterile, plastic, and functional tonight. In keeping with our tale of the soiree, a medical transplant proves to be a mystical experience. Strange how the occult may find itself in the most inappropriate surroundings. All things convey the emanation, the feelings of their former owners, even in the case in point, eyes. Our painting depicts the dilemma inherent in having the eyes that wouldn't die.
Okay, just as this featurette was in the final mastering stage, the aforementioned Scott Skelton alerted me to a neat little item that was too cool, not to mention too relevant, not to slip in at the last minute. This resulted in my being dragged down a 6-foot-deep rabbit hole for the better part of an entire day. But hey, this is the life of a film and television historian. We turn our attention now to the season one segment, The Doll, which, as I detailed in part one of this docu-trilogy, had a fair amount of extraneous material added to stretch it out. What I never noticed is that the syndication version opens with a unique Serling greeting that was presumably shot along with his Sixth Sense intros and appears this one time and never again, which is surprising given the repetitive use of some of the others. And as you'll see right now, it's pretty nifty.
We welcome you to a salon of seances and surrealism. Paintings and portraits designed to lower the blood temperature and invigorate the hair follicles. And there's no admission to this display save for a capacity for imagination, occasionally a sense of humor, and most frequently, simply a convenient light switch so that if you look at our paintings in the dark, you needn't remain there.
Looks like they shot it after the paintings had been taken down and placed in storage. Who knows, maybe it was the very last thing Serling ever did for the show. Thanks to Scott Skelton for alerting me to this neat little anomaly. It definitely deserves to be memorialized, along with the rest of these rare Serling bits. But that's not all. In my aforementioned rabbit hole deep diving, I discovered another rare object. No, not Mickey Rooney. This time with regards to The Hand of Borges Weems. If you catch the episode in syndication, the first thing you'll see is one of those new Sixth Sense greetings and a few Sixth Sense paintings to boot.
Good evening, art lovers. I'd like to take you on a conducted tour of a most bizarre little salon where the pictures are out of this world.
This is the only time a Sixth Sense era Serling greeting appears attached to an actual Night Gallery episode. But wait, there's more. Next, we hear some new Serling comments recorded especially for this episode.
Rather gruesome tale of transmutation. As you can see, our gallery tonight is adorned in the style of malefic pageant. No pomp and ceremony here, only grave circumstance.
This means that the Hand of Borges Weems, probably the single most tampered with segment in all of Night Gallery, is also the only segment for which Serling recorded additional narration after the fact. And if that painting doesn't look familiar, it's because it isn't one of the 25 Sixth Sense pieces, but it is unmistakably by Yaroslav Geber, and it certainly fits in here given its surgical nature. If he in fact painted it specifically for this episode, that would mean that the Hand of Borges Weems has the singular distinction of being the only Night Gallery segment with two different paintings by two different artists commissioned for it. Now, if you see only one syndicated Night Gallery episode in your lifetime, just to satisfy some sick, morbid curiosity before you run screaming back to these beautiful Blu-rays, I recommend The Hand of Borges Weems. And hey, where else can you see Harry Gardino fighting for his life against a giant tarantula? Okay, now we're done for real this time. Thanks for watching.